Flower Podcast, recorded October 31st, 2011. Episode 67, Housemanized Halloween Hypostrophe.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gammel from Chris Gammel's Analog Life.
Hey, Chris. What's happening in the world of Cleveland?
Well, right now, I have scary children mulling outside my door.
Oh, it is bloody Halloween.
It is Halloween, and I have been the grumpy old man, and I stuffed a bunch of towels inside my doorbell because I didn't want to disassemble it. I wanted to get down here, and basically, yeah, they might be out there ringing my doorbell like crazy right now, but I am sitting in the basement without candy. And
why didn't you rig the doorbell to scare the shit out of them in some way?
Yeah,
you know,
like,
as soon
or
as
spray
you push
with
the
water.
Doorbell, you know, some monster springs out or something, and scares the crap out of them.
That's a good idea, but I didn't have time this year. Maybe next year.
I don't understand this whole Halloween thing. It's so American. It's starting to take off here. There's kids walking around
really?
The bloody streets last night. Pain in the ass.
No, that'll happen. Yeah, that'll happen.
Unbelievable.
It's really not a holiday. It's kind of silly to call it a holiday. I love it because I love the creativity people have in costumes. Like I love
costumes. That's pretty cool. Yeah,
especially when people start working in electronics. Like I knew a guy last year who made himself into a working Game Boy. He took an old laptop.
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
He took the screen and people could actually play Tetris on him. And he he was standing there. Yeah, it was cool. It was really cool. You know, so that's a lot of fun. But on the other hand, it's kind of silly and the candy doesn't help.
Right, so Halloween, you don't actually have to dress up in some ghoulish, scary thing, right? Is it more common that people are doing, like, you know, they're dressing up as a Ghostbuster or something?
I think a lot of it's clever stuff these days.
Right.
It's not always, like, scary stuff. I've mentioned it on here before, I'm a super wimp, so scary stuff, that doesn't do it for me, so I really don't like it, so yeah.
Pussy.
But the, you know, the creativity side of it, that's great. I think there's some fun costumes out there.
Right. What happened? You know, they come to the door and they go, you know, knock on the door, trick or treat.
Trick or treat, yeah.
What happens if you go, well, trick, bastard, come on? Because, you know.
I've had that happen before.
Isn't that the, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, some guy ended up doing a magic trick, I think, and pissed he didn't give us candy, and we went on our way. It's like,
I guess
we shouldn't ask for trick next time, huh?
Yeah, right. That's the idea.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Hey, watch this, kids. I'm going to solder a BGA package to a to a circuit board by hand. Bet you've never seen that trick before.
That'd be brilliant.
The kids start booing. They're like,
now come inside, kiddies. We got to teach you electronics.
Yeah. Actually, no, you know, I saw that too. There's a Hackerspace mailing list in Cleveland. The Hackerspace is kind of rebuilding around here because of some stuff that's going on. But one of the people on the list, she was asking about it, and she asked where she could find cheap circuit boards. She had this wonderful idea that instead of handing out candy, because she didn't agree with that, you know, because of child obesity problems, whatever, she was going to hand out electronics kits to kids that were of, you know, appropriate age. You know, you're not going to give it to a toddler, but, you know, like 6-, 7-, 8-year-olds, why not give them a simple LED kit? And then if you got kids that are a little older, I mean, hey, why not?
I can only see one problem with that, is they almost certainly don't have a soldering iron, so...
Yeah, you know, we were talking about that, and I was saying that the thing I would probably do is, you know, try and, like, laser cut out, like, some cardboards. You know, really, you just need a way to form it all together, right? Because you can have kids twisting leads.
You can stick components through cardboard, and you can twist wires on the back, and, you know,
and you
can
even tell them to use
solder.
Yeah, like, scotch tape around, you know, a CR, what is it, 3022, is that right? The type of coin cell battery.
Oh, right, yep.
Is that what that is? I forget what the number is, but
it's a 2032.
Oh, 2032. Okay.
Yep.
Got those mixed around.
That's the diameter. Like, you know, the diameter is 20 millimeters and the thickness is 3.2 millimeters.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. So if you get a 20 You know, so that's where you can get all these different sizes. You know, you can get a CR2550 or something like that. That means it's 25 millimeters diameter by 5 millimeters thick and
yeah,
et cetera. So, yeah.
Well, I learned something on Halloween today.
There you go.
And even if you just gave the kids, like, throwies, you know, and you just take a 2032 and you just tape an LED around it, like, that's cool for a kid, you know? They don't necessarily need... It's not necessarily about, like, teaching electronics so much as showing kids that electronics can be really cool. And that's... I think that's a good way to do it. And
if you don't
mind spending more money than you might be spending on candy...
Of course,
although
yeah.
Candy's not cheap these days either. I mean, people spend... like $20 to $60 on candy these days for certain neighborhoods. So, why not try something?
Yeah, you don't need a soldering iron because you can just throw in like a little tiny breadboard or something. They're cheap. If you bought them in bulk from eBay or something, you know.
Yeah.
How much would they cost? It only cost a couple of bucks each, I'm sure.
Or if you got like a big perf board and you cut it out, right? I mean, like... Yeah, I think it's a really cool idea.
But then you've got to have instructions to go along with it, so you'd have to print out like a, you know, here's how to build it, kids.
Yeah, it would not be without effort, that's for sure.
Yep.
But I love the idea. I thought it was such a great idea. So
yeah, it's
much
great.
Much better than candy.
If any of you out there have done it or have heard of it, let us know. That'd be awesome.
That'd be good for costumes too. I mean, you see a lot of like LEDs on costumes these days too. So.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of BGA soldering, Dave, do you see the news today?
I've seen the bone. We've been boned.
The bone. They have released the bone on the world. Yes, the Beagleboard bone, or the Beagle bone, maybe? Are they calling it Beagle? Yeah, Beagle bone. Sorry.
Right. Beagle bone. Okay. Yeah. So they shortened it. It's not Beagleboard anymore. It's just Beagle bone.
Beagle bone. Yes. And so back in episode whatever it was, we had Jeff and Jason on here. And Jason was telling us all about the plans for the Beagleboard bone, or the Beagle bone, rather. Ugh. And it is released. It is released today. So they
but it's
they finally...
not bone-shaped, unfortunately.
No, it's been bone-colored. So.
Yep.
And it's interesting that it kind of coincides with like the skeleton of Halloween. Ooh. No, sorry. Didn't like that?
No, okay. Not at all.
Yeah. So it's great, though. It's great. I didn't really remember what Jason had told us about it, but...
Neither do I. Yeah, it's got a real high-powered, you know, ARM processor on it. And is it ARM or is it the OMAP? Sorry.
I believe it is ARM because it's the... And even OMAP has an ARM inside it.
Oh, of course it does, yes.
Yeah. So OMAP has like the... It's like a module-based thing in there. It has multiple processors and stuff. I talked to Jason today online, and he mentioned the reason they had to wait until today is this chip, the chip they're using on it, was just announced today. So this is a brand new chip, and so that's a good sign because that means you're probably getting leading edge kind of stuff, and probably
and
one of the...
And what's different about this chip? What's new about it?
Oh, I don't see a link
putting
on
you
here.
Putting you on the spot.
I'm going to...
Anyway, one exciting thing they've done is and they're deliberately advertising is that they're no longer using those little half a bee's dick sized pin pitch BGA devices. Half a bee's dick being 0.4 millimeters. They've gone from 0.4 millimeter pin pitch balls on their BGA devices. They're using a 0.8 millimeter pin pitch so that, you know, because the whole idea of this thing is that it's open source and you can make it yourself, right? You can customize it, you can build your own custom board. And well, you know, if you have to use a 0.4 millimeter pin pitch device, you're screwed, right? Yeah. You know, it's not easy. Your boards are more expensive to manufacture because the tolerances are all tighter on the solder mass and the etching and all that
also,
sort of stuff. And,
right.
Oh, yeah, it's just pain in the ass. So, but they've jumped to 0.8 millimeter. Pin pitch, I presume, on all the devices, all the BGA devices, because I can see at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 BGA devices on there. So maybe not. Oh no, there.
No, some of those are land grade stuff.
Little,
yeah,
they're a regular.
There's FTDI chip,
leadless chip carrier, one of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Photos, but still, it seems detailed. Like the Sitara. It's a Sitara based chip, I believe. So
Sitara.
It's one of their families.
What's that?
TI family. It's like a mid-range family, I think. And they're not bad. I honestly, I don't know much about them yet, but you know, the stuff that they're promising with it. I mean, the stuff that Jason told me about was interesting, was the fact that they're actually pushing this more as a, what do you say? Angstrom has been more of a focus than it was in the past, and we're actually trying to produce a software experience, something that he avoided in the past. So before it was more about, you know, hardware hacking and, you know, getting really down in there. Now they're kind of trying to abstract it out and use this as a building block, which you can see because they have a lot of headers similar to like an Arduino or, you know, for creating breakout boards, which is cool.
Are those headers compatible with the old version? I'm not that familiar with the old version.
I presume
they're compatible.
They're not.
No,
because the old one didn't have that many I/O, which is a good. I mean, it's a good thing. There's more IOs now,
right?
But if you look at the BeagleBoard XM, I don't believe it had all those I/O. This looks much more like a, you know, Arduino Mega type of layout.
Absolutely.
So
have they got the pin pitch right?
I'm sure that'd be pretty big oversight. I think Gerald's pretty good about that stuff. So
We'll see.
If you look at it, you know, there's really not much of a header at all on the XM. It's more HDMI connectors, Ethernet connectors. This is much more.
Okay.
This looks a lot more like a Mega or like the Google Android. This almost, you know, people would probably confuse this if they were looking for the first time with the Android ADK. Yeah, the ADK. Yep. Very similar looking, you know, same color and everything. So, but still, it looks pretty slick, and I've seen a lot of people very excited about it. So,
tell us the price, son.
Oh yeah, $89, man. That's a good sign. That's a really good sign.
For the amount of power that you get on there, that is pretty good. Because what was the original BeagleBoard? Over $200.
Yeah, original was like $250, I think.
Yeah, and then they bought it down to $150 odd.
Yeah, for the XM.
Yep. Now they've almost halved that again.
Yep. And I mean, it's getting to the point where I think that like TI is probably going to be throwing these things around. You know, they'll just keep giving them away. At least I hope so. I mean,
right. Well, it's a bit hard at that kind of price.
But yeah,
I wonder
how many
they actually manufactured up front to get that sort of pricing.
Yeah, for the demand and everything. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're going through distribution. So I saw Adafruit's carrying them, and I know DigiKey's going to carry them. So
okay, everyone going to sell it at DigiKey's the same price?
Well, they say that's their suggested, so maybe some people will cut the margin, but it'd be silly if they start.
So they must have a reasonable margin on that if they're selling them through resellers, because those resellers will typically mark it up, you know, 40%, 50%.
Yeah, something
like that. So maybe they're manufacturing it for under $50.
Yeah, they'd be, what, $36 less? So 90 minus 36 is 54. That's not bad. $54 for that. And it's not like a huge board, and like you said, the layout's easier now that it's, you know, bigger pitch BGA balls. So that's great. I don't know. So when I was talking to Jason though, he was saying that, you know, it's kind of, because it's so early in development, they're releasing it, but it's gonna be kind of rough around the edges. So if people are interested,
right,
I mean, they're gonna need help supporting it and bringing it up. And I don't know.
Okay.
It's an open source project. It's a big company doing an open source project, and it's still going. And I definitely tip my hat to TI and even more so Jason and Gerald and the whole BeagleBoard team. I mean, I know people know they're great people, but I just want to say again, it looks awesome, and the fact that they're still doing it is a really good sign. So
yeah, it's fantastic.
Kudos.
What's that connector on the end? Is that a USB connector on the bottom end of it? It looks like a big.
Let's see.
That's weird.
It looks like Ethernet on the bottom side, and then
Ethernet's on the top.
Oh, then the bottom. Yeah, the bottom is USB. That looks like
like a USB A or something.
Yeah, and it says it's able to do USB device. I thought it said somewhere on the page.
Okay, I would have expected to see a USB micro.
Yeah, it's a USB FIs. Sorry, I don't know much more about it. Maybe
we
can have Jason
on
in the future and talk more about
it. Interesting, and it comes with a 2 gig card as well. There's a micro SD card that must be. Oh no, that's the micro S. That's probably, is that the micro SD socket?
Yeah.
On the bottom.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. Anyway, it's got a micro SD. Maybe it's on the bottom. Soldered on the bottom. We need more photos of this thing.
Yeah, there's a video. If you watch the video, you'll see Jason talking. They have tons of techno music playing, and I made fun of him about that earlier. So.
Nice.
Lots of fun.
Yep. Yeah.
So great job.
Excellent.
Great job, BeagleBoard team. Keep it up, and we'll look forward to hearing more about it.
And it's really, it's, you know, it's not for simple stuff. You know, if you're using one of these to flash an LED, you know, it's gross overkill. Right.
Well, it's designed for a startup application. That's fine, know, but yeah. Eventually, I think.
Oh yeah,
I
mean, no, to start up and learn about it. But if you're using it as a doorbell controller or something, then you know, come on.
Yeah, they were talking in the video. They mentioned like 3D printing, right? So like a MakerBot or a Ultimaker, one of those.
Something that has a large amount of processing that needs to happen. You know.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Large amounts of real time processing and stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
Because this thing probably runs at what, a gig of 500 megahertz or something.
I don't know.
A gig? I don't know.
Keep asking me all these questions, Dave. It looks like a gig based on... Oh, that's the BeagleBoard XM video they posted in there, but... yeah, more details to come, guys. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff printed up on the internet, too, so if there's any other information out there, we'll try and link it in.
Yeah.
And Dave, stop asking questions, man. My
Sorry,
turn.
Dude.
I get to ask you a question.
Yeah,
go
for
it. Do you have a home yet? Do you have a home?
I do have a home. Well, kind of.
Kind of.
I've paid a deposit.
Hey, hey. The Nerd Cave is in the works.
It is. It is. And I shot some video yesterday.
Oh, you
all
did?
The
great.
Lights were out, yeah, but I had my headlamp on. But I've got my headlamp, so I'm shooting this video with my headlamp on.
Your true cave exploring experience came into play there.
Yeah, wow. So I'll probably upload that today. Oh, boy.
That's great,
actually,
man.
I'm in two minds with that. I need, you know, because I do these silly, you know, like I uploaded a video yesterday of some firmware, like a firmware Hygol scope hack, right? It was only like a minute long. It was my shortest video ever, you know. And I didn't bother numbering that. You know how I number each episode?
Yeah.
Which is something I started with, you know, and now I'm up to 120 something.
Oh, 212 you're on.
212, yeah. And I'm always in two minds. Do I number these little short little clips that I upload? Should I bother numbering those as episodes in quote marks? You know, because it's not really an episode because I didn't edit the thing. It's just like it didn't even go through my editing software. It doesn't have the usual outro or intro or something like that. It's just a random little video which I'm uploading. So I don't know. People out there, what
I don't know.
Do
I don't
you
watch
think?
Your videos,
should I be numbering
so I don't,
those?
I don't,
yeah, I know. You don't watch my blog, and I don't read your blog. And yeah,
there we go.
But yeah, I don't know. I just feel as though I didn't put any effort into it. I just hit record and spoke for 5 minutes, and I press stop, and I upload it straight to YouTube. Does that warrant an episode number, or do I have to actually put some work into editing the damn thing before it warrants a number? I don't know. Tell me.
I don't know, man.
There's people out there that say they like the numbering thing so that they can keep track of, you know, they can actually, oh, it's number 52, you know.
Right, I haven't seen that
and
one. I saw 51,
they can
right?
point to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know. Anyway.
Speaking of things people complain about, how about one of our favorite complaint items? Eagle. Eagle is coming out with a new promo. They got a new promo out for their Eagle 6.
They do. But it's not actually out yet.
No, it's just a promo right now.
Can you even... I don't even think you can download... Maybe there's some beta testers. I don't know. If you're a beta tester, let us know. If you're not under... NDA, or even if you are, who cares?
Oh yeah, that's great advice
just
there,
tell
Dave.
Us.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, they got a list of things that are new, so there's some good stuff. And this is exciting to see what they're going to do with this stuff. They had talked about it previously, the XML database stuff. So hopefully
that is the main change, right?
Yeah.
The XML data, they've gone away from the binary format. Apparently, it doesn't support the old format anymore.
So this is going to be like a hard stop once you update?
Yep. Once you update, you go to... there's probably a converter available, right?
Right, but
obviously,
it's one direction.
Right, if there wasn't, they'd be shooting themselves in the foot, Altium style. hey, ka-ching. but that's apparently the big thing, is that they've gone, you know, they've switched over completely to the new XML file format. It's all open, so that, you know, which is great. Fantastic.
Yeah, it should help with like diffs and stuff too. That's what a lot of people were asking for. I think that's the reason a lot of people were asking for it was for doing, you know, version control and that kind of thing and tracking changes. So,
right.
Yeah,
I like, and you can do that better if it's text based. Well, yeah, there's ways to do it when it's binary based, but yeah.
Yeah, possibly, but not really, yeah. Because if you think about a diff program, right? And actually, I don't know if it's on the list, but Evil Mad Scientist Labs, they had a great post about visual diffs and how you could do that. Because, you know, a lot of people in the open source hardware community are big about, you know, using GitHub or something similar like that, so revision tracking. And that's important in anything, right? How do you really do a diff between a schematic, right?
It needs to be built into the actual program like it is in Altium. Altium have their own built-in diff things, and it highlights, you know, stuff for you, and it handles that sort of thing. But, yeah, but then it's got to be built into the program, and then, you know, people... It's just another feature that they've got to work on.
If it's not there, it's tough then, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yep.
So,
this schematic, this XML thing is a way to do that, right? Because then it can highlight this text difference, and then the text is, I would presume that it's actually readable, right? So it says, you know, 7400, you've added this,
tags rather. That's how XML works. Tags. So if you say part, you know, bracket part, and then part, you know, around 7400, right?
Yeah. So you can see that you've added that part, because then that'll be extra text in that file that wasn't there before.
Right.
So that's the... Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the tough thing with binaries is, like, if you do the stupidest version of a binary diff, then you'll say, okay, well, this file says 1001. And then you might shift everything by, you know, if you insert a zero somewhere, then everything shifts by one bit and everything looks wrong at that point.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's where binaries really, that does not work well. And that's actually a problem with FPGAs too, is like if you try and, you know, if you have a bit file that you create from an FPGA design, then that's impossible for, and I've actually asked this on Twitter before too, because I've had trouble with FPGAs and revision tracking. You know, there's certain files that just don't play nice, and for some reason it's not really integrated into Xilinx or Altera, as far as I can tell. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I had never seen a built-in tool. It was always you always had to go external. So I'd be interested if people do know about that. I'm still always looking for good ways for revision control tracking of. FPGA stuff and like VHDL or Verilog. So
I just like keeping track of it manually. You know, I don't use these revision control tools.
You know, I used to be like that, but and I've had a boss like that too, where he would just zip up entire files and he'd say, today's October 31st. This is the file. This is a set of files. And I like that idea because it's the basis of it is storage is cheap. Messing this crap up is really expensive. And yeah. I get that, but it gets messy. It gets really messy, I think. I mean,
it depends on the project, you know. If you're just working on your own project and it's not that hugely complicated, nobody else is touching it, you can almost go, why bother, right? Especially if it's just, you know, a hardware project, you're fully in control of it. It's all in your head as well, you know. You've got this human brain, you know, it can do things.
I've heard about this.
Yeah.
Brains. And,
whereas if you've got source code and you've got, you know, 100 different files going into it and you've got different people, where, you know, of course you need version control tracking.
Yeah, and you need like automatic builds, all that other crap too. Yeah.
But if you've got just a little hardware board you're working on, it's got one schematic, well, you just keep the latest schematic there. That's it. That's your, you know, you have the latest version, and old ones you might, you know, just zip up or keep them there just in case you wanted to go back. But generally speaking, you know, you don't want to do that. You want to just build upon what your current version. Your current version is the latest. That's the only one you ever work on, and you build upon that. And you know, it's easy.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
easy
that's
to keep
true.
Track of.
That's true, and yeah, it's when it's smaller for sure. I've seen that before too with you know, hardware projects in general. It seems like, you know, we've talked about design by committee and how crappy that can turn out, but sometimes it's a reality where you have to have multiple designers on a project.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And that really does get messy. I haven't seen – the best I've seen is people splitting up pages of a schematic, but then even integration of trying to get all that stuff together starts getting messy.
Yeah.
So I've never really seen – and even on, like, open source hardware projects that we've seen, it seems like it's a much smaller team. Like, the Arduino team isn't big, and, you know, you see a lot of – smaller boards, they're just not big teams. And I don't know if it would be possible to have a really, really big type project like that, because if you got everybody spaced out and everybody's working on different parts at different times, how do you really integrate that when you have to buy a board at some point? You know, at some point someone has to say, well, you know, go buy that PCB, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Messy. Someone,
I've been there, done that. You know, we've had, like at, you know, companies, we've had multiple people working on libraries and things like that, and we had to use, you know, Tortoise version control and, you know, the Tortoise / SVN, you know, version control.
Oh, yeah.
Individual library files get checked into that and blah, it's all, you know.
Yeah.
It gets big and complicated and...
Yeah, I'm sure it seems complicated right up until the day when you need to recover all your backups and it works nice.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I'm sure the day when it doesn't work, you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah, but I, you know, for my own simple projects, I don't use version control for any. I don't have version control on my machine here. I've got no form of version control. No, I just don't need it. Yeah. For my own personal projects, you know, I've got a project subdirectory, and then there's each separate project has a subdirectory, and then there's firmware, and there's hardware, and then there's, you know, the latest files, and then there's a backup subdirectory, and all that gets backed up, and I just work on the latest version.
And all the software people out there listening, take it easy on Dave. We know that the comment section will be filled with vitriol, and don't worry about it. He's just a solder junkie. Come on, just take it easy on him. It's cool. So speaking of Eagle, did you see my KiCad tutorial?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, self promo. All right.
Hey, you've done a second one. Is that finished?
I'm in process. Yeah.
Right.
It's an interesting tool. I like it. It's not as bad as I thought it would be. I really did. Okay. I really was a little worried, but I think if people can do Eagle, if they can do, you know, Altium, I think you'll probably miss some features, but. More so from Altium than you would from Eagle. But
of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's pretty damn free, I'll say that.
right.
And someone told me about, someone on Twitter said that you can actually import Eagle libraries, which is the stuff I'm struggling on right now.
Yes, I think so.
Because I'm rebuilding all my libraries.
Right.
And I don't like that. So
you've made the conscious decision to switch to this, or you're just trying it out?
At least on the project I'm working on. I'm going to take it all the way through.
Okay.
Because you need some kind of driving force behind it. Otherwise, I'll just keep sitting there, not doing it.
Fart ass around with it, you know. You don't do anything. You've got to do a real project on it.
Right. And that, so I figure hell or high water, either I'm not going to get the thing done at all, which is a possibility, or I'll, you know, I'll actually get it done with KiCad and see how it all works out.
Yep.
And we'll see how it goes.
Now, there's some rumor with Eagle. I don't know if it's true or not, so don't shoot me down, but that
water cooler
there
stuff
will
going
be
on right
no
here.
More free version.
Really?
Yeah, that's a rumor going around, but I don't know if it's true or not. So if there's anyone from Eagle listening, please, can either confirm or deny that there will be... It'll stay exactly the same as before, that there will be
a
free version.
That is the opposite of what we wanted. That's the Freegal campaign, which fizzled, we should mention. Totally fizzled.
No, it's still there. Free Eagle.
Occupy CAD soft.
Because it's ridiculous. I've got to say it again.
Yeah.
If you want to design a single-sided board with two LEDs on it, but it's longer than 160 millimeters, you've got to buy the top-of-the-line package for $1,000+. Are you shitting me? That is ridiculous.
Yeah, this should change the rules. You know what, though? That's what I said. I said to someone, I said, well, if I can't change it, all I can do is use other versions of other things.
Use something else. Vote with your feet, folks.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was the thrust behind me switching over. And I don't know if it's going to work, but I think if more people do switch or they switch away from Eagle, that'll show right there. I think if they stop seeing uptake and projects using Eagle, then you're gonna see other stuff there. So
I think just out of principle, I won't promote Eagle. I've thought about it because everyone uses in the open source hardware thing, right? Because it had that free version available. So I got the Bootstrap and the Kickstart, and you know, it got that foothold in the industry. But I just don't like their pricing structure. It sucks. So Eagle, I'm not gonna support you. Screw you. I'm going to
that's a little harsh, Dave. I mean, what if tomorrow they open it up and it's free?
Well, then you'll be my best friend.
All right. He can be bought, folks, with free.
No, not bought. Yeah, by doing the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think the structure needs to change, but
they'll figure it out. Everyone agrees that it's shit, yet they still persist with it.
Yeah.
Everyone I seem to talk to about it, I don't like using Eagle, but it's what everyone uses, and I don't like their pricing structure, and I don't like the limitations and how they've structured them. Anyway, not happy. Please, if that rumor is true, then it's crazy. They'll be out of business before you can say KiCad.
I would be interested to see how much they're...
Or DipTrace or any of the others.
Yeah, Jita. Right. What else is out there?
Jita. Yep.
Design Spark.
Yeah, Jita and KiCad are the only true open source free ones, I think.
Okay.
If there is another one, please let us know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. What about this
KiCad? I want to know. I think I had a look at their website once. Can you actually download just a compiled Windows installation?
I have Windows. I have it on my Windows machine, and I have it on my Linux machine.
Oh, okay. Because I looked and they went, we do support Windows, but you go compile it yourself or some weird shit like that. And I don't want to have to compile the damn thing myself. I just want to, here's the download of the installation, with the .exe, install.exe or...
They got tons of stuff. So they got official builds for Linux and Windows.
Okay.
It looks like snapshots. They've got, so I think third parties then have unofficial builds for specifically for Ubuntu, Mac.
Right.
They got all these logos. I don't even know what the hell they are. Debian.
Right.
Fedora, Gentoo. Yeah. A lot of the Linux builds. So.
Got it.
Is that Red Hat? FreeBSD. Man, I do not know my logos. They keep changing on me,
You think?
Yeah.
I wouldn't know them either, so.
Yeah, I'll put a link to it if people are interested. I think it'll be good if there's more, and that's the thing, if there's more libraries and if there's more people using it, then there's critical mass, and then part vendors start making libraries and everybody starts making libraries for it, and that's what it really comes down to is ease of use because everybody else is using it. So
that's the thing,
it's kind of like Eclipse, right? Eclipse is an IDE that people at first poo-pooed for being an open source code development thing, and now every vendor, nearly every vendor, offers some kind of either Eclipse plugin or an actual build around Eclipse, and it's just a lot of development environments are now Eclipse based. And I might be talking on my butt on that one. I mean, that might be
exaggeration. I don't know. But I see it more and more often these days.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it for big FPGA vendors. I've seen it for software. I like it. So.
Excellent. Yeah, I think we need that foothold. People start using an open source package and then, get that, once that critical mass is reached, and then that package will be the de facto standard.
Yep.
And it just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
And you see something, it's Eagle, which is a commercial package. And,
Yep.
And it's not that great, apparently. People keep bitching about it.
Yeah.
I've lost count of the number of people who said, I use Eagle, but I hate it, but I use it because everyone else uses it.
Yeah. I've used it a decent amount, and I like it. It once you get used to it, it's okay. It's like any CAD package. You need to learn it,
of course.
So.
Yeah. All right. We've got the update on the 7400 competition.
Oh yeah. So were you a judge for that? Were you?
A judge.
You
for
are
that,
a judge.
Yes.
I thought we had that on the list, and I wasn't sure. So
yes, I am a judge for that. And yes, we have. We all the judges chose their top 10 projects.
Nice.
I think there were 71 entries.
That's great.
And we chose our top 10, and from there, we just got an email this morning about the rules for judging the next round or something, but I think that, there's a whole bunch of prizes, so there's more than 10 prizes, so obviously we've got to divvy those up somehow, but there's some really hot projects in there, and but as we expected, it is, because there wasn't a narrow focus...
Mm-hmm.
On the project, it was very open. Then we got a bunch of very open type projects. So it's hard to compare them, you know?
Yeah.
How do you compare, you know, some video game system with a, you know, some clever little LED flasher, right? Or some, you know.
Right,
it's
right.
just, yeah, it's very hard.
So it would have been better if it was like 5 chips instead of all 74 series logic.
I don't think, you know, I just think it doesn't work as well as a contest as it could have if it was more narrow focused.
As which contest,
like
Dave?
The 555. The 555 contest. Or like the one we've talked about, the microcontroller contest, and you limit it to either 8 pins, or you limit it to 1K of memory, or you know, somehow, you know, really strict limitations. I mean, this one just said, you know, you can use, you don't even have to use 7400. You can use 4000 series, and you can do whatever. You can use a million of them, or you could use one, or you could.
I'm not willing to run it, but I'm still behind the 1K memory. I love that. It was not my idea. I forget whose it was, but like a pick or anyone else, you know, 1K memory kind of micro competition. I think it's brilliant because that'll bring focus on.
I've been thinking about recently, and there might be something going on in the background.
Possibly. So I could be a judge for that if you run it, and then I could make snarky comments about how I didn't jump in the fray. All right. I like this. And then I could shovel out prizes and videos.
But it would have to be limited.
For sure.
To something like that. I was thinking, would you limit it to like an 8-pin? Like say an 8-pin micro.
Peripherals.
Yeah, but I'm more of the opinion that you'd limit it to code size so that you could use any mic. You know, you could use a huge 32-bit arm with 1,000 pins on it, but you could still, you know, because I think if you limit it to the 8 pins, which is something I think we've discussed before, then it's, you know, you're limited in the amount of I/O. So some of those 8-pin chips can have lots of, you know, they can have eight 16K of memory in them, can't they? Some of them are quite beefy little devices.
Because it's just I/O versus internal memory, you're saying.
But limiting, and then you know, there's only so much you can do with 8 pins, you know, and then you've got to have lots of external circuitry if you want to divide your, you want to get something clever, like you want to drive, you know, 1,000 LEDs with 8 pins, you know, stuff like that. But I think it'd be cooler to have, you know, like a 1K limitation or 2K or something like that. So then you could use a 1,000 pin chip if you wanted to, and, you know, you're limited to, you know, so you can drive 1,000 LEDs, but you've still only got 1K of memory to work with, you know.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I think that'd be very cool.
Yeah.
So,
well, the thing that I always do like about contests is that, and this one included, is that it kind of just brings focus back to it. Because, I mean, I think a lot of people that are new to the field don't know 7-4 series logic, you know, just the breadth of it and how important it was. And from that perspective, I think, you know, it's brilliant, you know, like, and even a 1K contest or a 555 contest, it's just about the focus on it. That's what's really important. So I like that. And I also like that Dangerous Prototypes is running this and not me.
Exactly. And it's bad enough being a judge, let alone running the thing. But that's the thing. Like, I would love to see a true cross-vendor contest. You know, if it was like an 8-pin or a 1K micro, I'd love to see every major microcontroller manufacturer get involved and offering free kits. And, you know, so you could choose the vendor. You know, it's not just one big, you know, it's not just Microchip or Atmel sponsoring it or TI or something like that, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, you get, you know, you can use anyone's micro or even a soft micro in an FPGA, right? Even a soft core or something like that, maybe.
Well, that might be kind of, because then you could put everything in logic around it. Man, that would be sick if you did 1K.
I
could make something pretty great if you put an FPGA around it, you know.
You'd have to draw the line there, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. That'd be fun. Yeah.
Right.
Well, anyways, 7400, is that how you say it? 7400? How do you say it?
7400
contest. Yep. So how, I mean, favorite, we should just wait? Is that kind of the idea?
I'm not allowed to say who my favorite is.
Oh, okay. What about dates? When is that stuff all getting announced? Any word on that?
I am not sure. We're working on it now. The judges, I literally got an email this morning. I haven't read it yet.
Okay.
About the second round judging. So it's in progress, folks.
All right.
So thank you to everyone who entered. Some of them are just awesome.
Yeah, I've seen them popping up here and there, and they're lots of fun. I like them a lot.
And as usual, quite a few people entered old projects. You know, they had some old project they worked on, and well, you know, that's fine too.
Yeah, not a big fan of that.
And as usual, there was a big discrepancy between documentation, you know, and videos and stuff like that. And some people have none at all. You know, here's the schematic and here's a photo of the thing and that's it. You know, it's like, well, okay. If it was clever enough, then, you know, it's going to get marked up there and might have made the top 10. But generally, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Or people that do video, just add some commentary, folks. You know, I know it's, you know, like you don't have to be on camera, but just, you know, talk into a microphone and say, here's my project, you know. It's a bit more personal and, you know, even if it is as simple as that, here's my project and I spent, you know, 2 weeks on it and I just got it done in time and look, it flashes these LEDs and does this, blah, blah, blah. You know, very quick and simple, but make sure you add some commentary to your videos. There's nothing more boring than watching a 5-minute video with no commentary.
Right.
So, yeah, just, you know, LEDs flash and things like that. No, just voiceover, folks, please.
Right.
It'll help your chances a lot.
Definitely.
Yep.
Speaking of commentary, when you're doing commentary and you're publishing articles even, make sure you proofread before you before you send things out. IEEE had a bit of a snafu.
Have you screwed something up, Chris?
No, IEEE did.
Oh, yes. This is
you
brilliant.
Were so excited about this.
This popped up in my email box. Get ready your amp hour bingo sheets, folks.
Yeah.
Cuz not only are we going to mention the IEEE, we're going to mention Arduino, and we're also going to mention women in engineering. So this is great. What it is that they sent out an email alert to readers that, you know, if you sign up, you're in this tech alert email thing. And with this article entitled, "With the Arduino, now even your mum can program." That was the, big email blast to, I don't know how many tens of thousands of subscribers they got. And apparently, well, at least one person complained, I'm guessing. And they
Right.
So they had to, well, the actual title of the article is The Making of the Arduino, where they interview the makers of the Arduino and how it's evolved and all that sort of stuff.
Right, yeah.
You know, I think it's a good article. But
yeah, it was.
But the someone complained about the title, which was only in the email. The article was called The Making of the Arduino, so that was fine. So whoever sent and approved the email blast, it was probably getting their ass kicked now because someone complained and that, you know, it's, hey, sexist, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
know, anyway,
and the thing is, I think it's just from a former era, you know? It's like, your mom could even do it, you know? Now, personally, I would have written, your grandparents can even do it, right? You make it...
Yeah, it's not that offensive. Lighten up a tad. It's a common expression.
Right, but there are a lot of moms out there now who are in electronics or whatever else, and I'm sure that that was not well received. So I think it was a clash of expressions.
And there's
expressions
a lot of tradition there in calling, you know, in this case, actually giving the feminine form to it, right? It's almost French, isn't it? They have feminine, if you know about French. Anyway,
that's
about all I know about the French language. Anyway, and also, you know, the male side of the things, like, you know, mankind, and I say guys like a lot, you know, I'll go, hey, guys, but it's a bunch of girls, right? It's three girls, and I'm going, hey, guys, because it's a generic, you know, I don't mean to imply that you're guys, you know, I mean, but it's just a generic...
It's just a thing from the past, really.
I know. It's not a big deal, I don't think. Anyway, someone bitched, and here's the response, and I'll quote from Susan Hassler, who's the editor-in-chief of IEEE Spectrum, a woman. And here it is. I'm an IEEE member and a mum, and the headline was inexcusable, a lazy sexist cliche that should never have seen the light of day. Today, we are instituting an additional headline review process that will apply to all future tech alerts so that such insipid and offensive headlines never find their way into your inbox.
That might be taking over the edge a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah.
She should have just said, the guy that writes email headlines is a dumbass. The people in charge of the sacking have been sacked.
Right. Anyway, it was a hilarious. I thought it was a ball tearer. I almost wet myself when I opened the email. Yeah. It was hilarious.
Like I said, I would have written that as even your grandparents can do it, but maybe grandparents would have gotten.
They still would have gotten, you know, someone would have got offended. You're going to offend somebody with anything you do these days. Harden up, people. Please.
Now, the real question is, now, personally, my mom is not technical at all. I do think that with an Arduino, my mom could program.
I think so, yeah. I think my mom could do it too.
I think, you know, a technical, someone whose mother is technical is
right.
Is probably a little less surprising. But, yeah, I think my mom could program with Arduino. So, it's that's pretty cool. Headlines aside.
Keep digging, Chris.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, come on, lighten up. It's not a big deal, you know. Anyway, someone had a bitch about it, and she took it as offensive because, you know, well, you know, she's the editor-in-chief, and, you know, and she's a woman, and, well, yeah. Oh, boy. Anyway, I thought it was hilarious. There you go.
One other thing about girls in engineering, I actually saw this. There's a White House, obviously U.S. They had a...
obviously.
Right. Not just a White House in some country.
No.
But they had this really great series on their site about like women engineers and scientists basically telling them to break shit. Like, that's like the basis of this video. It says, start breaking stuff. That's the name of this entire campaign. I love it.
What? So this is a White House campaign? This is a government campaign?
Yeah. From the Office of Science and Technology Policy.
Oh, right. Yeah, we've talked about that before, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. So you should check out the video, too. I'll link it in there. But, yeah.
Awesome.
Good advice. Good advice.
Break shit.
Yep, exactly. What else did we want to talk about? We wanted to talk about India, too.
There is an Indian thing where they've doubled... Is this actually... They've doubled the amount of engineering schools in the last 5 years. That is... That's pretty huge, right?
That's a lot of schools. Yeah, basically they...
And they're saying it's too excess. Well, go for it. Explain.
Oh, basically, they keep seeing all this demand, but now they've kind of overbuilt so much that they're going to have, like, too much. They're going to have too many seats and too many spots for potential grads.
And oversupply of engineering schools. And, oops.
Yeah. Let's see. In Tamil Nadu... There's 527 engineering colleges, and that's just in one area, basically.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's a lot. so
that is crazy.
It's interesting. I mean, you wonder about quality, too.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, where do all the teachers magically appear from?
Right, exactly.
You know?
If it's just, a degree printing factory, then it's all going to come from...
Yep.
You know, it basically it's going to be the same thing in the U.S. You could have, or anywhere really, you could have thousands of schools, but it's still going to be the top talent is going to come from the top schools. So, and there are some really great schools in India, but it's amazing how many there are at the bottom and how much demand there actually already is for engineering. I thought that was impressive.
But apparently they gambled wrong, and they're not, and they can't fill them.
Right.
And
yeah.
There's 44,000 seats that have no takers.
That's
so the supply is higher than the demand. Oops.
Where have
obviously,
I heard of this
we don't need new
Where
engineering colleges, the official explained.
Yeah.
Oh,
real
boy.
Estate? Something like that, yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Real estate. I always wonder about that. Like, you know, they build these new, you know, office parks where I'm buying into. You know, mine's not that new. It's about 8 years old or something. But, you know, they're popping up everywhere around here. And, well... Where do they magically find all the people to fill them? You know, are there that many people like me sitting at home running their home business going, oh, wow, it's, you know, I need to move out and jump into an office building?
I don't think so, no.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's been
They're
a big...
breeding like rabbits.
what, real estate developers?
Yeah. And bloody buildings. They're just, it's crazy. Yeah. Around my place here, there's an 18% vacancy rate in new office complexes.
Oh, that's
so that's a combination of that they've built so many in such a short amount of time, and we've got no public transport out here, and, you know.
Yeah,
sort of a combination of issues. So I'm surprised that they can even get 80% full.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Speaking of replicating, how about robots? Did you see this new creepy robot? Speaking of Halloween.
You're freaked out, right?
I am so freaked out.
Awesome to watch.
It is very
weird. It is very creepy. It is like Terminator creepy.
So I have a friend who works there here. It's at Boston Dynamics, and they're the people who did like Alpha Dog and what are the other ones? Big Dog. So they're like a lot of like pack carrying kind of robots meant for carrying large loads or whatever. And I don't know if I think we posted a video recently, but now this is just a straight up. It's called Pet Man, and it like you watch the video, and it's just walking. I mean, it's
a full upright, you know, it's got arms and legs, and it's a full upright walking robot, and it's walking on this treadmill, and it is so human-like. It's very human-like.
Super creepy. yeah. And it wobbles a little bit, but...
It doesn't have any hands. It's just got, like, these tubes for arms, you know, like the feet and legs look reasonably realistic, you know, well, you know, kind of. But, yeah, the arms are just
shoes.
These tubes.
Right.
He's actually got some form of shoe on, by the looks of it. And
they're real shoes.
There's these cables. Unfortunately, he's not fully autonomous. There's these cables dangling down from the roof that, you know.
Well, if you paid that much for a robot, I don't think you'd let it just go free either.
Right.
And also, you know,
and he's
in case it tries to kill you.
Like push-ups, and the robot actually does push-ups, and he does, you know, stretches and...
Yeah.
I'd love to know what sort of senses does it have? Like, can it actually, you know...
Does it know not to kill people?
Right, does it follow the Asimov's...
The three laws, yeah.
The three laws of robotics, yeah.
Oh, man, it's just... I don't know. It's scary. Like, honestly, I look at it and I'm just like, you know, you see a lot of popular culture references,
yep.
Terminator kind of stuff, and you're just like...
Mm. You know. It looks like... one of those robots they had in one of the Thunderbirds episodes. If you're a Thunderbirds fan, you might know what I'm talking about, where they've got these automated robots at this nuclear plant. Are you a fan of Thunderbirds, Chris?
I'm not. No, I don't know any Thunderbirds stuff.
Oh,
maybe
goodness.
I'll check
spent
it out.
Spent my entire childhood watching Thunderbirds. I know them all backwards.
Was that the puppets?
They're not puppets.
Were they marionettes?
Super marionettes. Super marionettes.
You know, actually,
that's an insult. That is like calling a Star Trek fan a Trekkie. They're a Trekker, you know. You insult them if you call them a Trekkie.
Well, the reason I know about Thunderbirds then is because of that Team America World Police. There was the guys that made South Park. It was the same stuff.
Yep.
Super marionettes. Oh, don't talk about my puppets that way. Those are creepy too. Just in case anyone else is wondering about my position on marionettes, those are creepy too.
Yep. But yeah, it just the look of the robot reminds me of these sentries they had in this nuclear place, and they
Well, I
like
now
it.
Robots
anyway,
that I'm a little bit less creeped out about, but still kind of creepy is there's another article about agri robots, and there was a Hackaday article about it, and there's a robots.net article about it. But basically, this is kind of the future of farming, and it's really a great idea. I mean, if you think about the amount of people you need in order to really produce the amount of food that we'll need on this planet, right? You need robots eventually. Now, granted, those robots might come and kill you and use you as food, but. Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think it's creepy. I think it's cool.
It is cool. I mean, like in terms of like sensors and motors and everything, robots are. I think robots and quadcopters. I think they're like this amazing amalgamation of like everything cool that people want to work on. You know, control systems. So I mean, great field and a lot of growth too. And man, especially like the. You know, from an industrial standpoint too, right? We've talked about manufacturing on here before. The future is not hand assembled. You know, like the future is robots. So, learning how to fix robots or design robots or anything like that, there's there is a lot of benefit in that. Maybe less so on the fixing, because I think they'll just do a lot of replacing, but
there's
maybe
a lot
not.
Of college courses that now, you know, combine electronics with the mechanical
mechatronics.
Sort of, you know, aspect,
yeah,
mechatronics, and they, you know, and you basically you become a computer slash robot slash electronics slash person, you know,
a slasher. Cool. Yeah, you're a slasher,
right?
Yeah,
so you can go and compete in BattleBots or something like that.
Yeah,
what's it called? I don't know. Anyway,
it's not BattleBots anymore, is it? It's something else.
I've never watched any of them. So American.
Oh, I love them.
Anyway,
it's great.
Speaking of education. There's an article which you put on here, Silicon Valley new hiring strategy, where someone has dared to ask, why hire a PhD when a self-taught kid is just as good?
Right.
And then, they're talking about software here, right?
Right, especially because they're getting so hard to find.
Yeah, whereas, you know, the Silicon Valley startup companies, they have these notoriously strict standards. You know, they want to hire the best graduates from Stanford and MIT and all that sort of stuff, you know. But but this article's asking, you know, is it a science or is it more of an art, you know, or a craft that, well, you know, if you're taught formally, you may not be let's put it the other way, somebody who's self-taught could be as good or better than somebody who's formally taught. And the answer is yes, it's certainly true. You can be.
I think so too. And there's proof of it too. There's another article on here, like from the BBC about Germany. And, you know, they have this amazing apprenticeship program. It's basically like being on a co-op. It's like a co-op on crack, basically, you know, or an internship on crack. It's just basically that. And not only that, then you have the employers co-developing curriculum so that you're actually learning what people need to know. So then instead of being in your programming class and learning Java, the employers say, no, we actually still need you to learn C. I'm sorry. Right?
Right. Yeah.
Which is a gripe of mine personally. But
right.
You know, like...
Do tell. Why is it a gripe?
Why? Because if you start with Java, you're so high up. You know, it's such a abstracted, high-level
language.
Oh, right.
So that language. Is your beef. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean...
Right.
I think a student learning Java doesn't really understand memory until they start learning C or something, you know, assembly or anything like that, right? Until you get into further courses. Like, programming in terms of software and actual, like, software concepts and object-oriented, all other crap, that's important. But you don't understand how stuff actually works, right? The best embedded programmers out there know how to manipulate memory on a bit-by-bit level, basically. And if you get some kid who's learning Java or, God forbid, you know, LabVIEW is like...
A script kitty.
Yeah. I mean, like, and I have seen courses where LabVIEW is the intro programming class. Don't get me started on that one.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, how are you really going to know that? So now, maybe the argument is you'll never have to, right? People that go
that
work
is. In a lot of industries, you won't have to, and it's true.
Right. But then what you have to do is you have to start breaking out your curriculum so you have hardware people that are learning C to start with, right? You can't generalize your classes anymore in a university. You have to have intro classes that start in C or in Java or whatever else, right?
Could argue that it can end there. It depends on what your end use is. You don't have to learn that high-level shit if your job is – if your industry is all low-level stuff.
True.
Right? Yeah. And vice versa. If you're working in some high-level industry – you don't, you know, like if you're working in, you know, some, you know, if you're one of these people who get sucked in by the finance companies to develop, you know, these algorithms for, we talked about them before, these, you know, get paid a shit buttload of money to work on these algorithms, you don't give a toss about low-level stuff. You're
maybe
working
a lot
on
of those guys are doing FPGAs
shit.
These days. I mean,
oh, yeah, true. It's getting down to the hardware level. But you know what I'm talking about, right? There are these high-level apps where it just doesn't matter a rat's ass.
Right, like
and
app development.
And there's whole
right?
industries where it doesn't matter a rat's ass.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, it's they're almost two different fields.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, when we start the Amp Hour school day, we will make sure that... Software people are not allowed. No, I'm just kidding.
exactly.
You get out. You get out of here, software guy.
Your favorite programming language is solder.
That's right. You wire wrap that board. Point to point for everything. BGAs included.
flip that bastard on its back, stick it down with super glue, and bond out.
Dead bug the crap out of it.
When you're using those stinking reflow machines.
Yeah, it's for wimps.
You're going to hand solder that puppy. Boy. Yep. I love it. Ow, amp hour's up, dude.
Is it?
Yeah.
Sad.
Just pissed it away.
We did. Spent half of it answering the door. My trick-or-treater that was actually a trick me. I was playing on my wife by accident.
Oops. Oh, well.
All right.
And we have no wonky, shonky product this week.
Oh, no. It's too bad.
We'll have to find something for next week. So if you've got something, just a complete load of garbage, send it to us, please.
Yeah. Or if you don't like that, if you don't like the shonkies, let us know, too. We haven't heard otherwise. I've seen a lot of people really like them, and I've loved making fun of them. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, our goal is to get sued one day.
Yeah, hopefully in Australia, not in the US.
No. Well, all this shit comes out of the US. You do realize this,
I know.
Right?
Oh, I totally know.
Yeah. So you're the one getting sued, dude.
I know. Great. Thanks, Dave. Yeah.
No worries.
All right. You can find Dave on Twitter at EEVblog. Find me at Chris_Gamble. Or alternately in jail once Dave gets me convicted. Yep. Or leave a comment on the site. We always like that, too.
Yep. chris.gamble@sanquentin.com. What's a generic
Sing Sing? Sing Sing, maybe? Or Alcatraz? Alcatraz isn't open anymore, but yeah.
No, it's not. Well, it's open to the public.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know there's tunnels under Alcatraz? I've been down in them.
Oh, yeah? I've just seen The Rock.
Yeah. Right. No. it's not
Welcome
quite
to
like
the Rock.
But there are underground, yes, there is an underground section underneath the cells where they used to put the really bad prisoners. They used to lock them down under the bottom there. And, I've been down there on a special tour.
Look how much I'm learning from the foreigner. I've never even been.
That's right. Well, before last year, you had never even been to the West Coast, have you?
Yeah, there's no time. Who has time, really? Who has time?
Ah, well.
All right. Well, we're out of time. So we'll see you guys next week.
See ya. And I will continue the show on my own. Oh, boy. This was my original intention, actually. When I first got the idea for the Amp Hour, which was before the blog, actually, which was before my video blog. I thought, well, you know, who's going to want to listen to me just rant on by myself